Again, this morning, in this darkest of the time of year, we draw on the stories and rituals of traditions that celebrate light. Today, we celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah, according to Arthur Waskow, is the moment when light is born from darkness, hope from despair. Today, in many ways, and with the help from many traditions, we celebrate the importance of hope's light in all of our lives. Now, as Vicky and Bob Tabor come forward to light our chalice, I invite you to turn to the words of chalice lighting in your order of service. Candles, fire, and stars. These are the symbols of this most blessed of seasons. Candles for banishing of darkness. Fires to warm hearth and home. Stars to beckon us, guiding our footsteps to the holiest. Thank you. I now invite Jen to come forward for lighting our candles of the season. First, our Advent wreath. And in ancient times, candles were mounted on wagon wheels that were decorated with evergreens, and they were lit during the dark weeks leading to the winter solstice when the light would return. Christians adopted a similar tradition of lighting candles during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, celebrating the light that Jesus brought into the world. Each Sunday, we light a candle for one of the messages of the Advent season. Last Sunday, we lit the first candle for faith, and we'll relight that now. This week, we add the second candle. We light that candle for hope, the hope that's so necessary in every one of our lives. And now we'll light our Hanukkah menorah. I want to tell you a little bit about it first. You can see it has 8 branches that are the same height and 1 branch in the center that goes up higher. The central candle, the higher one, is called the shamus, or the helper candle. The candles are lit in the evenings of Hanukkah to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah. And Hanukkah is 8 days long. Each night we light another candle on the menorah until all are lit. And now from the shamus, we'll light the candle for the first day of Hanukkah, which began last night. You notice we start at the right and go across, just like we read Hebrew scripture, from right to left, as opposed to left to right. And as the candle for the first day of Hanukkah is lit, I'll read you the traditional blessings for the menorah for this day. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who sanctified us by your commandments and commands us to kindle the lights of Hanukkah. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who wrought miracles for our ancestors in the days of old at this season. Blessed are you, Lord, God, ruler of the universe, who has kept us alive and has preserved us and enabled us to reach this time. I now, in invite you to join in singing the greatest of Hanukkah hymns, Rock of Ages, Let Our Song. It's number 223. And please rise and remain standing for the covenant and affirmation, and I will be listening for the words. This church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Seated and attentive to our Hanukkah story.
The story of Hanukkah began more than 2,000 years ago in a land called Judea, where the Jewish people had lived for centuries. A very powerful king named Antiochus from Syria had conquered the Jewish people and held them prisoners in their own land. Antiochus had a big army, and they tried to destroy the Jewish religion and make the Jewish people worship the Greek gods instead of their own one God. The army took over the great city of Jerusalem and destroyed the holy temple there. They threatened to kill the people who did not give up their religion. Some of the Jews did give up the religion, but most did not. Many fled to the hills outside of Jerusalem and worked together to find a way to be free again and be able to practice their religion. Eventually, they could not take the oppression anymore, and some of the brave Jewish people decided to fight Antiochus and his powerful army. They were led by a man named Judah. He lived with others who had fled Jerusalem in a village in the hills outside of the city. He and his followers were called the Maccabees. They were greatly outnumbered by Antiochus's army, but they were smart, and finally they won back the city of Jerusalem and freed the Jewish people. When they did, songs of triumph rose up from the Jewish people, hailing their hero, Judah Maccabee.
When Judah and his followers got to the temple in Jerusalem, they discovered that it had been badly damaged. They found the special oil lamp that was always supposed to be burning in the temple. Its flame represented the presence of God. They also found just a little bit of oil used in the lamp, but only enough for one day. It was so important to have the lamp burning again that they lit it, even with just the small amount of oil. Quickly, Judah sent two of his brothers running on foot to a city where they could get more oil, but it was an 8-day journey. They could never be back in time with the oil to keep the lamp in the temple from going out. But amazingly, the lamp kept burning for 8 days until more oil arrived. Hanukkah is the celebration of two great miracles, the triumph of the Jewish people against the powerful army of Antiochus, when they regained their freedom to have their own religion again, and the miracle of the oil lasting for 8 days. The 8 days of Hanukkah, symbolized by the 8 candles in the menorah, reminds us of the struggle of the Jewish people to keep the light of their faith burning, even in times of oppression.
As you heard, Hanukkah is a celebration of how the ancient Jewish people held on to hope, even when things didn't look good, even when they were outnumbered. It's also a celebration to remind us to hold on to hope today. Hope gives us courage and strength, just like it did the Hebrew people. And sometimes, when we don't give up, when we hold on to hope, we can do things that seem almost impossible, just like the Maccabees did more than 2,000 years ago. So Hanukkah has an important message for us, but it is also a fun family holiday, which is celebrated for 8 days. Each night during those 8 days, Jewish families light the Hanukkah menorah, adding 1 candle each day. And they usually put it in a window so everyone can see it. And they eat special foods like the famous potato pancake called, does anyone know? Latkes, which they often serve with applesauce and sour cream. And after the candles are lit in the evening, there's storytelling and singing and games to play. On the first night of Hanukkah, especially, the children usually get gifts of gelt. Michelle, can you do show and tell? Maybe you can show them some gelt. Gelt is money, coins, sometimes real and sometimes chocolate. And sometimes families give their children gifts every night for those 8 days. The whole family gets together. People come to visit, and there are lots of parties. And they play games. And one of the games the children play is spin the dreidel. Do you know what a dreidel is? Who knows what a dreidel is? A top. You said it. And usually, can you see the ones down there again? Usually they're a lot smaller than this and much more spinnable than this one. But this is good for illustration anyway. But there's lots of sizes of them. And it's a little top and it has Hebrew letters on each side. Some kids make their own dreidels, just like I saw them doing this morning in RE out of clay. And everyone takes turns spinning the dreidel. Sometimes they're made of wood, clay, plastic, all sorts of things. And when you do, depending on which side ends up on top, you either get more coins or lose some. You can use other things. I understand some people I know play for raisins or you can play for chips or whatever. But depending on what letter turns up, you either have to put them in or take them out. And the winner at the end of the game is the one who gets all the gelt or the chips. It's an easy game to play, and I bet you'd all like to play it. And you know what? As you go to RE today, we have dreidels and instructions for all the kids. So you get to take home a dreidel and an instruction sheet on how to play the game.
There are 8 bright candles of Hanukkah. There are 8 bright lights that glow. Lights of hope and of peace, saying prayers that never cease, still the same as long ago. There are 8 bright candles of Hanukkah, and they shine on winter snow. So they tell without words how a miracle occurred. That's the message of their glow. This one lone candle, apart from all the rest, is used to light them all. So when winter is deep, we find cheer in their glow, and the ancient days recall. There are 8 bright candles of Hanukkah in the depth of winter's night. With glad hearts we celebrate this our festival of lights, flames of glory and hope so bright. Lights of Hanukkah bring hope that shines so bright. Lights of Hanukkah bring hope that shines so
I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. Being together, singing a song together, sending a card with holiday wishes or words of support or encouragement, bringing a casserole, meeting a sad face with a loving smile, retelling the stories of the season, lighting the candles. These are all ways that we bring hope to each other. Right here in this time together, we give hope and we receive hope. And perhaps most important of all, we rediscover hope in ourselves. In this season especially, we're reminded that hope is a gift we have to give others, and nurturing hope is the gift that we can give to ourselves. But it's not always easy. To receive the gift of hope or to find it in ourselves, sometimes, as the words we just sang tell us, hope is hard to find. Perhaps you've been in a place where it just doesn't seem logical to have hope. In a place in your life where the facts of a situation may suggest you should just give up. Some of us have been out of work for a while, and it's not easy to find the hope necessary to go and apply for a job after many rejections. Some of us have seen our life savings, retirement money dwindle, and to be hopeful with a rather drab economy isn't easy. And there have been profound losses in some of our lives, the breakup of marriages or the loss of a loved one. Today is the worldwide candlelight observance sponsored by the Compassionate Friends. Tonight at 7 p.m., people will not only light the first candle of Hanukkah, but many will also light a candle in their window for all the children who died, as a symbol that their light still shines. I think about how hard it is for parents, for families, to go on who have lost a child. We've experienced that loss in this congregation several times, and such a loss can shake our very foundation and can make hope hard to find. We know that there are those in our community with serious physical and mental illnesses that could lead us to believe that having hope is not particularly logical. Some of us even know the debilitating pain of abuse or hate that can so profoundly rob us of our ability to hope. The facts may suggest otherwise, yet we can and we must meet even these situations with hope. The well-known Unitarian Universalist writer Norman Cousins states it this way: the case for hope has never rested on a provable fact or rational assessment. Hope, by its very nature, is independent of the apparatus of logic. What gives hope its power is not the accumulation of demonstrable facts, but the release of human energies generated by the longing for something better. The capacity for hope is the most significant fact in life. It provides human beings with a sense of destination and the energy to get started. It enlarges sensitivities. It gives value to feelings as well as to facts. These words, I think, really capture the essence of the Hanukkah story. It was not logical to think that this small group of oppressed people could rise up and gain their freedom. Traditional wisdom would have said, don't try anything, you'll fail. But they disregarded the logical constraint and acted because they had the audacity to hope. There was such a longing for something better that it energized them to do the seemingly impossible. They defeated their oppressors and reclaimed their temple. And even though they could see that there was very little oil, not enough to keep the lamp burning until someone could obtain more, they lit the lamp anyway. Just maybe it would somehow keep burning until the new supply arrived. And isn't that what we're called to do again and again? Forget the naysayers or the pessimists within that are telling us it makes no sense to be hopeful. Be daring and go ahead and light the lamp of hope anyway. This kind of hope has a long tradition with the Jewish people. In fact, I would describe it as the dominant theme of the Hebrew Bible. Holding on to hope was what kept the Jews alive and allowed their faith tradition to continue. They knew when hope was gone, things would be over for them. They understood that there is power in hope, that even when it's illogical even when it's against all odds, it keeps us going. Even the worst, most horrible and overwhelming situations can eventually yield and be defeated by the power of hope. They knew that approaching a difficult situation with hearts full of hope had a positive effect on the outcome. They also knew the opposite, that when hope was lost, all is lost. In Proverbs, it's written, where there is no vision, the people perish. It's only our ability to hope which allows us to sustain a vision for the future. It's hope that gives us the meaning and purpose to continue, even when logical minds or our frail bodies may tell us otherwise. The stories of Hanukkah and Advent both tell us that in spite of centuries of difficult times, even when they were not at all optimistic about their immediate future, the Hebrew people never lost hope. It's not just back in those days before the Maccabee uprising, but throughout the Jewish people's history, they've known defeat, slavery, persecution, even genocide. They've survived the worst of times because they held on to that hope that things would, in fact, get better. You know, when the Gestapo arrested the famous author Tristan Bernard, he said to his wife, "Time of fear is over. The time for hope has begun." We can find similar hope to his in the struggle of black women and men in this country. Dr. King wrote, "We must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope." And the contemporary black theologian Cornel West, when speaking about the ongoing struggle with racism in our nation, said, "I'm not an optimist, but I am a prisoner of hope." And in the Muslim tradition, the prophet is asked what one should do if they know for certain that the world will end tomorrow. And his answer is, plant a tree. That's hope. This message of hope comes to us from so many religious traditions, especially at this time of Hanukkah and Advent and Christmas and solstice and Kwanzaa. These are holidays that celebrate hope. They're there, I think, on the calendar at this dark time of the year to fan that flickering flame of hope that burns in each of us. You know, hope is important in every stage of life, but the hopes we hold in our hearts do not remain the same as we grow older. Certainly the hopes we had when we were 15 are not the same hopes we have at 50. The hopes of youth are very different from the hopes of middle-aged folks and those in their senior years. And so too, our hopes change when we face serious illness or injury, or when we go through a major tragedy or disruption in our lives. As a minister and as a friend, I've walked with many on the paths of what I would call changing hope. And this time of year, I often think about a friend of mine. His name was Andrew. He had a difficult struggle with cancer, and I've shared his story with you before, but it seems so poignant on this holiday that I thought it deserved to be shared again. I never remember that he lost hope during his struggle. But as his disease advanced, his hope changed. I remember being with him in Provincetown after he had finished his first treatment regimen, and he was full of hope for a complete cure. Several years later, his hope was that the medication would maintain the status quo, not cure the cancer, but keep it from spreading. Later, he hoped to be strong enough to come back to Provincetown for a vacation or make another trip to Europe with his partner. He never was unrealistic about his condition, but he was always hopeful about his future. His last summer, when even though he was feeling not well at all, he insisted on going shopping and buying his partner an expensive Christmas gift and then wrapping it in beautiful Christmas wrap paper right away, which, by the way, was a bit of a challenge because it's hard to find good Christmas wrapping paper in July. But we did, and he bought it early because he was concerned he wasn't going to be able to go shopping too much longer. His hope was to be around for Christmas to present the gift, but he wrapped it early and put it where it would be found just in case he was not. Towards the end, he hoped for a good day without much pain, or another visit from a special friend. He hoped to live on in the stories of his friends, and he hoped to see God. Hope was important to him right until the end. His hope was unyielding, inextinguishable. And I'm sure that that kept him living many more years. He lived a long time with this condition, many more years than he would otherwise have lived. And not only that, that hope allowed him to live those years fully. This season teaches us the value of that kind of inextinguishable hope. It's a reminder that we should ask ourselves daily how we can live hope, not just for ourselves, but for others. Yesterday, as you heard from Susan, a group of carolers from our church brought the joy and hope of this season to some of our seniors or those who may not be able to get out and be with us. In so many ways, from kind words to visits with those experiencing difficult times, from carrying signs at a peace rally to buying a Christmas gift for a child in a domestic violence shelter, or sending a simple gift bag to a child in India, or, as I will do this week, wiring money from the minister's discretionary fund to our partner church in Transylvania so they can purchase gifts of hope for the elderly who have very little and the children who also have very little. And we will spread hope there together. Here in our own community, in the next couple of weeks, it's always busy these next couple of weeks, and we'll be helping to bring hope. We'll be helping few folks who, because of economic pressures or sorrows in their lives, may be on the verge of losing hope. We'll help with things like toys for children who might not get them otherwise. We'll help with food for the holiday table, with fuel bills for some to keep homes warm. We'll make visits and bring a plant or some cookies to those who may be shut in or ill or mourning, or unable just to be part of our community at this time. And we'll also make an extra effort to invite people in here, as we're doing with our Gospel Vesper service next Sunday, and as we do with our Christmas Eve services. Invite others to come be with us and have their hearts filled by words and by music of hope. You know, so much of what we are able to do here is due to your generosity of your talent and your time, your generosity to the minister's discretionary funds. And I thank you all for that generosity and those contributions once again. One of the greatest things we as a church do for members and for friends and for the community and even for the world, I think, especially for those who are experiencing tough times, is that we bring hope. You know, we can't undo tragedy. We can't meet every economic need that people have or solve every problem, but we can bring hope. And it's a powerful gift. Bringing hope to others is actually the very core of the message our Universalist forebears told us that we had to preach. John Murray, the founder of Universalism, instructed his followers as following: go out into the highways and the byways. Give the people something of a new vision. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. Hope is the promise of the ages, and it never stops singing. Listen for the song when you need to hear it. Share the song when you know others need to hear it. We all have challenges. And these are, as we hear it often said, challenging times. Despair can creep in on us, but as Alexander Pope once wrote, hope springs eternal in the human breast. It's planted in each of us. If we nurture it in our lives and in each other's, it will surely guide us through dark times and bless us in ways unimaginable. Make hope your gift to yourself and to others this season. Claim it and give it away every chance you get. There just can never be too much hope in the world.
Oh,